Donald numbly obeyed. It would have been worse to make his way out alone. At the first landing they came to, a worker stood by the conveyor with some type of gun. As the next container passed by, he shot its side with a flash of red, the scanner buzzing. The worker leaned on the railing, waiting for the next one, while the container continued its ratcheting plummet.
"Did I miss something?" Donald asked. "Are we still fighting deadlines? What's with all the supplies?"
Mick shook his head. "Deadlines, lifelines," he said. At least that's what Donald thought his friend said. Mick seemed lost in thought.
They spiraled down another level to the next landing. 10 more meters of reinforced concrete between 33 feet of wasted depth.
Donald knew the floor, and not just from the plans he'd drawn. He and Mick had toured a floor like this in the factory where it had been built.
"I've been here before," he told Mick.
Mick nodded.
He waved Donald down the hallway until it made a turn. Mick picked one of the doors, seemingly at random, and opened it for Donald. Most of the floors had been prefabbed and furnished before being craned into place. If that wasn't the exact floor the two of them had toured, it had been one of the many just like it. Once Donald was inside, Mick flicked on the apartment's overhead lights and closed the door. Donald was surprised to see that the bed was made. Stacks of linen were piled up in a chair. Mick grabbed the linens and moved them to the floor. He sat down and nodded to the foot of the bed. Donald ignored him and poked his head into the small bathroom.
"This is actually pretty cool to see," he told his friend.
He reached out and turned the knob on the sink, expecting nothing. When clear water gurgled out, he found himself laughing.
"I knew you'd dig it once you saw it," Mick said quietly.
Donald caught sight of himself in the mirror, the joy still on his face.
He tended to forget how the corners of his eyes wrinkled up when he smiled. He touched his hair, sprinkles of grey, even though he had another 5 years before he was over that proverbial hill. His job was aging him prematurely. He had feared it might.
"Amazing that we built this, huh?"
Mick asked. Donald turned and joined his friend in the tight quarters.
He wondered if it was the work they'd been elected to perform that had aged them both, or if it had been this one project, this all-consuming build.
"I appreciate you forcing me down here."
He almost added that he would love to see the rest, but he figured that would be pushing it. Besides, the crews back in the Georgia tents were probably looking for them already.
"Look," Mick said, "there's something I want to tell you."
Donald looked at his friend, who seemed to be searching for the words. He glanced at the door. Mick was silent. Donald finally relented and sat at the foot of the bed.
"What's up?"
he asked. But he thought he knew. The senator had included Mick in his other project, the one that had driven Donald to seek help from the doctor. Donald thought of the thick book he had largely memorized. Mick had done the same. And he'd brought him there not just to let him see what they'd accomplished, but to find a spot of perfect privacy, a place where secrets could be divulged. He patted his pocket where he kept his pills, the ones that kept his thoughts from running off to dangerous places.
"Hey," Donald said, "I don't want you to say anything you're not supposed to."
Mick looked up, eyes wide with surprise.
"You don't need to say anything, Mick. Assume I know what you know."
Mick shook his head sadly.
"You don't," he said.
"Well, assume it anyway. I don't want to know anything."
"I need you to know."
"I'd rather not. It's not a secret, man. It's just, I want you to know that I love you like a brother.
Always have.
The two of them sat in silence. Donald glanced at the door. The moment was uncomfortable, but it somehow filled his heart to hear Mick say it.
Look, Donald started. I know I'm always hard on you, Mick said, and hell, I'm sorry. I really do look up to you. And Helen.
Mick turned to the side and scratched at his cheek.
I'm happy for the two of you.
Donald reached across the narrow space and squeezed his friend's arm.
You're a good friend, Mick. I'm glad we've had this time together, the last few years, running for office, building this.
Mick nodded.
Yeah, me too. But listen, I didn't bring you down here to get all sappy like this.
He reached for his cheek again, and Donald saw that he was wiping at his eyes.
I had a talk with Thurman last night. A few months ago, he offered me a spot on a team, a top team. And I told him last night that I'd rather you take it.
What?
A committee?
Donald couldn't imagine his friend giving up an appointment, any kind of appointment.
Which one?
Mick shook his head.
No, something else.
What? Donald asked.
Look, Mick said, when you find out about it, and you understand what's going on, I want you to think of me right here.
Mick glanced around the room. There were a few breaths of complete silence, punctuated by drips of water from the bathroom sink.
If I could choose to be anywhere, anywhere in the coming years, it would be right down here with the first group.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure what you mean.
You will.
Just remember this, all right? That I love you like a brother, and that everything happens for a reason. I wouldn't have wanted it any other way, for you or for Helen.
Okay.
Donald smiled. He couldn't tell if Mick was fucking with him or if his friend had consumed a few too many Bloody Marys from the hospitality tent that morning. All right.
Mick stood abruptly. He certainly moved as though he were sober.
Let's get the hell out of here. This place gives me the creeps.
Mick threw open the door and flicked off the lights.
Wimping out, eh? Donald called after his friend.
Mick shook his head and the two of them headed back down the hallway. Behind them, they left the small, random apartment in darkness, its little sink dripping. And Donald tried to sort out how he'd gotten turned around, how the Tennessee tent, where he'd cut the ribbon, had become one from South Carolina. He almost had it, his subconscious flashing to a delivery of goods, to 50 times more fiber optic than needed, but the connection was lost. Meanwhile, containers loaded with supplies rumbled down the mammoth shaft, and empty trays rattled up. Chapter 20, The Year 2110, Silo 1. Troy woke up in a fog, groggy and disoriented, his head pulsing. He lifted his hands and groped in front of his face, expecting to find the chill of icy glass, the press of domed steel, the doom of a deep freeze. His hands found only empty air. The clock beside his bed showed it was a little after 3 a.m. He sat up and saw that he had on a pair of gym shorts. He couldn't remember changing the night before. Couldn't remember going to bed. Planting his feet on the floor, he rested his elbows on his knees, sunk his head into his palms, and sat there for a moment. His entire body ached. After a few minutes slipped by, he dressed himself in the dark, buckling up his coveralls. Light would be bad for his headache.
It wasn't a theory he needed to test.
The hallway outside was still dimmed for the evening, just bright enough to grope one's way to the shared bathrooms.
Troy stole down the hall and headed for the lift. He hit the up button, hesitated, wasn't sure if that was right.
Something tugged at him. He pressed the down button as well. It was too early to go to his office, not unless he wanted to fiddle on the computer.
He wasn't hungry, but he could go up and watch the sunrise. The late shift would be up there drinking coffee.
Or he could hit the rec room and go for a jog. That would mean going back to his room to change.
The lift arrived with a beep while he was still deciding. Both lights went off, the up and the down.
He could take the elevator anywhere. Troy stepped inside. He didn't know where he wanted to go.
The lift closed.
It waited on him patiently. Eventually, he figured, it would whisk off to heed some other call, pick up a person with purpose, someone with a destination.
He could stand there and do nothing and let that other soul decide.
Running his finger across the buttons, he tried to remember what was on each level.
There was a lot he'd memorized, but not everything he knew felt accessible.
He had a sudden urge to head for one of the lounges and watch TV, just let the hours slide past until he finally needed to be somewhere.
This was how the shift was supposed to go. Waiting, and then doing. Sleeping, and then waiting. Make it to dinner, and then make it to bed.
The end was always in sight. There was nothing to rebel against, just a routine.
The elevator shook into motion. Troy jerked his hand away from the buttons and took a step back. It didn't show where he was going, but it felt as if it had started downwards. Only a few floors passed before the lift lurched to a halt. The doors opened on a lower apartment level. A familiar face from the cafeteria, a man in reactor red, smiled as he stepped inside.
"Morning," he said.
Troy nodded.
The man turned and jabbed one of the lower buttons, one of the reactor levels. He studied the otherwise blank array, turned and gave Troy a quizzical look.
"You feeling okay, sir?"
"Hmm? Oh, yeah."
Troy leaned forward and pressed 68. The man's concern for his well-being must have had him thinking of the doctor, even though Henson wouldn't be on shift for several hours.
But there was something else nagging him, something he felt he needed to see. A dream slipping away.
"Must not have taken the first time," he explained, glancing at the button.
The silence lasted one or two floors.
"How much longer you got?" the reactor mechanic asked.
"Me? Just another couple of weeks. How about you?"
"I just got on a week ago, but this is my second shift."
"Oh?"
The lights counted downward in floors, but upward in number. Troy didn't like this. He felt as if the lowest level should be level one. They should count up.
"Is the second shift easier?" he asked.
The question came out unbidden. It was as though the part of him dying to know was more awake than the part of him praying for silence.
The mechanic considered this.
"I wouldn't say it's easier. How about less uncomfortable?"
He laughed quietly. Troy felt their arrival in his knees, gravity tugging on him. The doors beeped open.
"Have a good one," the mechanic said.
They hadn't shared their names.
"In case I don't see you again."
Troy raised his palm.
"Next time," he said.
The man stepped out and the doors winked shut and the halls to the power plant. With a hum, the lift continued its descent.
The doors dinged on the medical level. Troy stepped out and heard voices down the corridor. He crept quietly across the tile, and the voices became louder.
One was female.
It wasn't a conversation. It must have been an old movie. Troy peeked into the main office and saw a man lounging on a gurney, his back turned, a TV set up in the corner. Troy slunk past so as not to disturb him.
The hallway split in two directions. He imagined the layout, could picture the pie-shaped storerooms, the rows of deep-freeze coffins, the tubes and pipes that led from the walls to the bases, from the bases into the people inside. He stopped at one of the heavy doors and tried his code. The light changed from red to green. He dropped his hand. Didn't need to enter this room, didn't feel the urge, just wanted to see if it would work. The urge was elsewhere. He meandered down the hall, past a few more doors. Wasn't he just here? Had he ever left?